Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, December 1st, 2020. Made it to December. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. I appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. And, of course, we will cover COVID-19 news, but we also can talk about other stuff. As a matter of fact, I'd appreciate talking about some other stuff if you have other topics you'd like to bring up. Well, let's see. We'll start with when you want to check in. I want you to, this is directed net, so I want you to check in with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and your location to be recognized by net control. Let's start first with those people who might be on the Echolink system. It takes a little bit to get on Echolink. Who is out there on Echolink for the emergency preparedness net? Come now, please. Okay, not hearing anybody on Echolink, but we can take the general check-ins now for the 529 emergency preparedness net.
Good evening, Brett. This is Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, Mike, and Happy Valley.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Candy.
Good evening, Brett. November 0. November Oscar. Fred Lafayette.
Whiskey Delta 7, Alpha Lima Echo. Dale Kaiser.
Tango X-ray, Dan and Kaiser.
Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray, Crittenden, Salem.
W7NAT, Nate in South Salem.
Kilo 7, Lima Tango Delta, Charles Mobile.
Let's pause there for just a second. Was that Kilo 7 Lima Delta Tango? Is that correct? Can you come back again, Charles?
Kilo 7 Lima Tango Delta LTD.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Kilo 7 Lima Tango Delta, just like the LTD car. Very good. Yeah, you're new to my log, and I use this logging program called FLNet, and so I usually type in your suffix, and if it doesn't come up, it pops up and stops the action, and then I have to look you up. So I did find you on there. Very good. Thank you for checking in. Let me go back through the list here, check everybody else in. Nate was before you. That's Whiskey 7, November, Alpha Tango. We had Crittenden, Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray. Dan, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray. Richard, Tiger there, Whiskey 0, Echo Delta Foxtrot. Dale checked in, Whiskey Delta 7, Alpha Lima Echo. Glad to hear it. Dale is kind of the guy who started the emergency preparedness net. And he actually has a lot of information about all kinds of other topics. So maybe if you have other topics you'd like to talk about, we can get Dale involved, and he can pull up his website there. He has a ton of information about things like generators and batteries and all kinds of things there that we can talk about. Let me get a drip. Let's see, before Dale was Fred checking in there, November 0, November, November, Oscar. Art was there, Eve, Kilo, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. And Mike started our group off there, Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie. Okay, we're taking check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
Hi, Brett. This is Kilo Echo 7, Golf Bravo Kilo, John and Kaiser.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
Okay, there's John, Kilo Echo 7, Golf Bravo Kilo. And Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. Three Richards. Any other Richards out there, or anybody else?
Kilo Juliet 7, Romeo Papa Hotel, Vince and Jefferson.
Whiskey 7, Romeo Golf Mike, Reiner in Dallas.
Okay, there's Vince, Kilo Juliet 7, Romeo Papa Hotel, and Reiner, Whiskey 7, Romeo Golf Mike, Reiner's in Dallas. So Reiner, are you going to help them with the installation of the mesh there? I think it's tomorrow, right?
I think they were doing something with it today, but he never got a hold of me, so I don't know what's going on at this point, but... Yeah, I guess they wanted me to turn the antenna, which I can do tomorrow whenever they're ready for it. I guess they couldn't find Victor Point, so I'm wondering if they have a clear path or not.
Okay, well, we can talk about that, the difficulty of finding things with a very tight beam. And that's a little bit of the issue is we might want to talk a little bit about sort of this up-and-coming new kinds of emergency communications that we'd like to be able to do to solve some problems. But when we use microwaves and very powerful beams, they're not as forgiving in terms of where you point them. And you can't just sort of throw a tower up and say, okay, let's try it here. Yeah, there could be just one tree or one building in the way that is blocking the signal, and that I think that's just something that we have to deal with. We talk about that a lot on Thursday night on our mesh network discussion net if you have questions about that stuff. But we're trying to get hooked up in Polk County. Their EOC is a new EOC, and they're trying to get our mesh network so they can send high-speed data. So anyway, this is the Emergency Preparedness Net. Any other check-in?
Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray, Lane, South Salem.
Okay, there's Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. Welcome to the net. Let's see, it's 10 after 7. Let's pause here and let's see if we have any announcements for the net. Anybody with an announcement, come now, please.
BA7 AVU.
Okay, good evening, Dan. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform, go ahead.
We'll let the little CW computer have its way there. Tomorrow night is our slow scan net. It starts at 8 o'clock. And if you haven't done it before on our net, or if you've recently disassembled your station or something like I so often do, then sure and test it out at 8 o'clock so we can kick right in and start sending pictures. We do enjoy the variety of pictures that people find. Some of them are concentrating on jokes, and that's okay. But there's all kinds of pictures out there, and we would like to see as many as possible. Maybe something describing something you're doing with ham radio recently. And on Thursday, as Brad just said, the mesh net at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock is most of our get-togethers, with the exception of the slow scan net, which we hope we avoid getting in your way by running the slow scan net at 8 o'clock. There's lots of other nets during the week, but that's what we're highlighting for the moment. And if you really want something crazy, tune in at 11 o'clock for the Insomniac net, in which we have trivia. And please make sure you have some sort of an answer to the trivia when you do check in. New people will be checking in close to 12 o'clock. And after you check in twice on the same day, usually they'll recognize you and start moving you up the list, and you check in earlier. Back to you, Brett, WA7ABU.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Was there any other announcements for anyone else out there? Okay, I'll just make a general announcement for radio usage that our weather pattern seems to be favoring. Actually, we probably are supposed to be having a bit of a temperature. Well, I guess you would call it. They're predicting some kind of thermal stagnation. That usually means we've got a high pressure area that's sort of stuck, and that can lead to some good radio conditions. Some temperature inversions. So the kind of weather we're having with the fog and then it being sunnier up on higher elevations, that can enhance propagation on VHF and up, 6 meters and up. We've also had fair success with 10 meters. So if you, almost everyone falls in the category that they can play with 10 meters. So if you have any way of doing that, you might want to try your hand at 10 meters. So it's exciting. We're getting we have more sunspots. We definitely are in the new sunspot cycle, and some more opportunities to have fun with the radio. Any other announcements? Okay, well, let's see. Let's go through our... I don't want to talk the entire night about COVID tonight, okay? But in terms of, from last week to this week, we still, our numbers are not... they're getting worse, That's basically it. I mean, I told you before, keep an eye on our numbers, okay? The number that we kind of have to watch is our hospitalization rate, okay? So... if you recall, let's see, last time we were here, that was on the 7 days ago, okay? And that we had around 25th, okay? That was... at that point in time, we had around 489 people in the hospital, 113 people in the ICU, and 44 people on ventilators statewide. Let me get a drip. Well, today we're 577 people in the hospital, 111 in the ICU, and 54 on ventilators. Okay, all these numbers are going up, all right? Now, it's just, again, situational awareness, all right? These numbers are going to go up more, all right? And what if you have to have any sort of incentive at all, it's to sort of try to, again, remember the stuff that we've been talking about. There's nothing new here. We have the same information I've been giving you all along, about keeping yourself safe. You guys are good at keeping yourselves safe. This is not the time to relax our vigilance here, okay? The reason why is that we you know, well, numbers always go up in the hospital in the winter months anyway. We have influenza still. Get your flu shot, okay? I'm due for a flu shot. You need to get in there and do it. You can make an appointment, get in and do it. And I'm trying to do it this week. I got a lot of stuff that's been going on. I'm putting it off. Don't be like me. Do as I say, not as I do. Get your flu shot, okay? You don't want to have the flu on top of this. So the thing is, we just really don't want to overburden our hospital system because, you know, then other care suffers, all right? We want that hospital to be there when you have, you know, some other condition. You want to have beds available to you. And that's hearing reports of places around the country where people are showing up and they have things like brain tumors and there's no place for them, you know, and they have to be transferred to another hospital. That's really bad. And I just want you to be aware of that we are running out of hospital resources in terms of space and staff to take care of you. And that's just something to be situationally aware of. So be as careful as you can and do what you can to minimize your exposure and risk. Comments on that?
RGM.
Yeah, Reiner, go ahead.
My son-in-law works at the hospital, and they made a point of telling me, him and his wife, that they're getting very full there. So what you're saying is absolutely the point here.
Okay, so, I mean, it's interesting because I was looking today, there's a frequently asked questions thing on the Washington Post. I was looking at that, and I actually have these different topics that you can look up stuff on. And then they have, you know, how we have these trends, okay? And it turns out, like, the different, what trend or what people are asking questions about, you know? So, like, staying healthy, there's, you know, it says there's 46% more interest over 4 weeks, last 4 weeks. That's great. You know, other things are not changing, but there is 233% more interested in healthcare. But interestingly enough, that if they break it down into hospital capacity and PPE, there's 60% less interest over the last 4 weeks. So I don't know where these, you know, sort of trends come from, but the, you know, that's the thing I kind of want you to pay attention to a little bit here. And it is, you can look at our numbers, you know. Turns out, like in Marion County, we actually have a pretty good supply of N95 masks in Salem Health. Actually, one of the best. You can look that up on the OHA website. I'm not sure why we have so many N95 masks. We did a great job there. We have, you know, like a 1,000-day supply of N95 masks. On the other hand, if you look at all the other things that you need, like gloves, we have a lot of gloves, like something like 2.2 million gloves. It's only a 30-day supply of gloves. So keep that in mind that our supply chain, you know, is not just N95 masks. We have a lot of things that we have to do healthcare. People first resource, and then all these other things. And we're going to add to that in the next, you know, few weeks, hopefully, as we do vaccinations, because now you've got to wear gloves and all those things for the vaccination. So that's additional burden, and I'm hoping that we're gearing up for that because we're going to need needles, we're going to need gloves, masks, you know, and in greater supply than we do in the hospitals right now. So that's just keep that in mind, that, again, situational awareness. Any comments on that? Yes, Nate, go ahead, please.
Has there been a tremendous lock all of a sudden of people being tested?
Well, where? You mean in Oregon or you mean elsewhere?
Well, in Oregon.
Well, Not necessarily. There is a little jog in the data, and actually it's sort of, well, of course, Mondays are not, they don't release much data over the weekend. There's always a kind of a gap over this thing. But we do have more, in Oregon we tend to test people who have symptoms. We don't have these drive-through testing facilities that they have in other states. Like in California, you can just drive up and get yourself a test. You know, you don't need a reason. But we still follow the prescribed people thing where you need to have someone order the test for you in order to get it. You have to have some sort of reason. Some people, like hospital workers and people that work in nursing homes, get tested as a matter of course. So, and those people get tested multiple times. So they are sort of supposedly reporting those people now as more tests. If you're tested five times the same person, it's going to show up as a few more tests. But what we have to look at is that, yes, we're still getting more cases per day. You know, that number is going up. You know, we've been over 1,000 now for the last, we're up to, let's see, what's today's? Today's the 12th. Let's see, weekly average 1,331 for this week, you know, and again last week it was in the, you know, sort of 1,200s, 1,300s, but compared to the beginning of November, I mean, we had a week daily average of 500. So we're really, you know, kind of going up a lot. You can just look at these trends, you know. Whatever method we're using, it's showing an upward trend, okay, and in the number of cases. And again, we said the cases weren't as important as and the deaths aren't as important, but the number of people in the hospital shows you really relatively how many sick people they are, because a certain fixed percentage of people end up getting sick and having to go to the hospital. So it kind of is a better marker to look at in terms of the outbreaks. Yes, hello, Richard. Your comment. I'll go ahead and I'll repeat your question because I know you're trying to, it'll record your question. So let me, what's your comment? Okay, so you're asking how do we compare to our first peak, which was, you know, around April, actually, is when we were the highest month. And then we went up again. We went down in June, and then we came back up in August, and then we went down, and now we're going back up again. So how does it compare to the first outbreak? Well, in let me get a drip, and I'll answer that for you. So the trend that I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at the Oregon Live, which is a nice, simple page to look at of kind of at a glance kind of thing. And what it shows the data from starting on April 10th, where we had 146 people in the hospital, 66 people in the ICU, and 54 people on ventilators, okay, in April. The next big peak we had was in June, where we had 166 people in the hospital, 48 or 50 on ventilators in the ICU, and around 30 on ventilators. So we are, again, like I said, 584 today, or 577 today, 111 in the ICU, 54 on ventilators. So the number of ventilators hasn't gone up. It's about the same as it was, maybe a little less in terms of ventilators. Maybe we're not putting as many people on ventilators. And the number of people in the ICU, you know, is about double. But the number of people in the hospital is about five times. Now, this is statewide data, KG7, GDB. Any other comments on that? Another thing I guess I need to say about first is let's just get these numbers out of the way, I guess, first. Okay, so, you know, there basically isn't really any place, you know, countywide data. There isn't any place around Oregon that is escaping this. I guess Wheeler County has the least number right now per cases per 10,000 people. They have 5 cases. But Marion County, not so good. You know, we're, 274 cases per 10,000 people. We have an 11.4 positivity rate, that compares to, Multnomah County. We like our friends there in Multnomah. They've got 219.6 cases per 10,000 with a 7.7% positivity rate. So actually, we have a higher positivity rate than Multnomah County does. So that's, they're probably doing more tests than we are, so that positive rate does reflect the number Nate asked before, what's the positivity rate. If you're doing a lot of tests, you're going to have that positivity rate hopefully will go down a little bit. At least if you compare county to county data, you're still seeing this upward trend everywhere. It's just the trend is going up. So the other thing we can talk about is the R value that we call the reproductive number. This one's not so good. Go to rt.live. That's Romeo Tango dot Lima India Victor Echo. That's a website, and it shows you the up-to-date values for RT, which is measure how fast the virus is growing. Average number of people who become infected by an infectious person. If it's above 1, the virus spreads quickly. Guess who is the worst in the country? If you guessed Oregon, you win, or you lose. 1.54, we are the highest in the country right now, with a range of 1.2 to 1.88. Washington is 1.27 in comparison. New Hampshire is the second at 1.29. So we are rising faster. Our reproductive rate is estimated as being higher than every other state in the country. Again, situational awareness here, guys. Just be aware that the virus is still spreading.
RGM question.
Yes, Reiner, go ahead.
Have they found any mutations or more virulent forms of this yet?
Yep, KG7DB. So, they have had some mutations, but it's interesting. I was looking at this last week. We talked a little bit about that. There seemed to be this one mutation that happened early on. So the original strain from Wuhan became taken over by the second mutation that basically kind of ended up in the United States and taking over. It's more infective, and we talked about how they deplete these little hamsters, and the first form of it, there seems to be two main strains of the virus. And early on, that second strain, which seems to pass more easily from subject to subject, they showed in hamsters, definitely that there was a difference between the two strains in terms of infectivity at close range aerosol. But that's the main mutation. Okay, they've seen things that they say are deletions, which are a little harder to probably because again, what happens is our cells make copies of the virus, right? And when you get infected, the virus takes over your machinery and your that makes proteins in your body and says, oh, don't make those nice hard proteins that you normally do. Instead, let's make virus. Okay, and so the virus RNA is turned into proteins and it hijacks our machinery and starts making copies of the virus instead, okay? Basically the way it works. Now, that isn't a perfect process. There are mutations that happened. There's misreads. It's like these DNA polymerases protein making machineries can miss. Now, if they have a single base mutation, that's a common one, like if it's, then you get a change in the actual function. They haven't really seen that happening very much. They have seen some triplets that are lost. That can change something. If you lose three nucleic acids in a row, then you actually can skip an amino acid. That could change a protein. But we haven't seen like it's getting worse in terms of there are some different strains, but it hasn't been like, oh, we're mutating into a different form. Okay. So, KG7GB. Now, again, let's talk a little bit about vaccinations, because that's the next thing that we need to worry about. So, one thing that's nice, I was reading about the difference between, you know, treating, you know, an infection versus vaccinating against an infection, is that vaccination tends to be a more general and better method of preventing the illness than a treatment, because you can. It turns out that, you know, I think everyone probably realizes the things about like the super bug that you get from antibiotics and things like that. If you don't kill off, say, a bacteria with a treatment like an antibiotic, that the ones that are left behind, they're the ones that grow back up again. Okay. Now, virus doesn't work quite the same way. You can have antivirals, and you could theoretically treat a virus and try and kill off some susceptible viruses, and then that would select for the viruses that had maybe a slightly different genetic makeup that might be able to then come back stronger. Okay, so to see how a treatment could result in a stronger strain, but that's not the way vaccines work. Vaccines work by showing the immune system this foreign protein and saying, hey, you know, and then it mounts this sort of general response. We start making things that attack different parts of that protein. And in doing so, we actually end up with more of a shotgun kind of treatment with multiple treatments that clump up and prevent the virus from adhering or replicating or attaching or whatever. That's usually what happens. So it's actually a little more promising way of getting an effect than a treatment, because it doesn't select for one variety over another. Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We're still talking about COVID here. This is the emergency preparedness set. Anybody else want to check in this time?
I got a question, though, for SK6STX.
Yes, sir, Dan. I will do my best. Go ahead.
Well, in the past, you mentioned when the virus or when the vaccine came out, like, you wouldn't be number one in the line to get this thing. And yet they're planning on wholesaling this stuff, like, all over the place. The question is, how safe do you think this virus or this inoculation thing is going to be? Or do we still have to be leery of it?
Okay, it's a very good question, okay, because safety is part of, the strategy of this thing is that a couple of things. First of all, we have to find out whether it's safe and whether it's effective, okay? And I'll talk a little bit about effectiveness and versus efficacy in just a little bit here. But what we're basing our results right now on a trial, phase 2/3 clinical trial of, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40,000 people on these two different vaccines. Pfizer's vaccine had more people in it, I think 43, and Moderna's vaccine had 33,000, something like that. Correct me if I'm, you know, off a little bit, but approximately they're in the thousands, okay? Now, we know that they did vaccinate people who were over the age of 65 in those. I don't know exactly how many there were. That was a number I pulled out before, but it wasn't the majority of people. It was a broad cross-section, but it did not include anyone over the age of 80, and people at risk, and it didn't really have data on people under the age of 18, okay? So, you know, you have to start somewhere. So you start with these things, and we we try these things, they divide people into two big pools, right? There's a treatment pool and a placebo pool, and then they double blind that, and you don't know who got the vaccine and who didn't, all right? So, you know, all we can tell you right now is that of those people, then they look for, first thing they look for is any adverse effects. And there are some side effects that they have mentioned, and they're typical of, like, the flu vaccine kind of side effects. You know, soreness in the arm, you know, a little bit of flu-like symptoms, you know, headache, that kind of thing. You know, nothing that really would really cause trouble. You know, they haven't found anybody that would, you know, stop the program, this is bad for you, okay? So that's what we have right now, all right? So let me stop there and see if you have a follow-up question on that.
Yeah, the question would be, would you go out and get it? That was where you'd have to start. So if you want to set an example, you think that would be what you'd want to do?
Okay. All right. So let me get Richard's question there, and I'll answer you just on my own basis. Okay. So first of all, I wasn't included, and I wasn't going to be the first one to volunteer for the new vaccine. Okay. And they did seem to manage to get a large number of people. But let's hear what Richard's question is and what he has to say. Okay, yeah, let me just repeat that. Again, if we do vaccine trials, he's saying that we give the vaccine to people. We don't know if it's effective because we don't test them directly with COVID. You know, we just put them out there and we wait a certain amount of time. And that's why it's taken as long as it has. It basically, this is the deal. We don't ever do that. I mean, that would actually be pretty good, quick way to do it. It would be if you were really believed in it strongly enough, you know, that, yes, this vaccine works, you know, you could just, you know, go ahead and expose these people directly to someone with COVID and see how many people came up with it. We don't do that. It's not ethical. Never would happen, okay? Not in this country. So that's a good thing. You know, we don't want... But so what we do is we just sort of wait and see, well, okay, you know, out of the people that were given this vaccine, you know, all these thousands of people, you know, what happened, all right? And what the good thing, then we'll talk about what efficacy means, okay? So the first thing that we talk about is efficacy, all right? And efficacy isn't quite the same as effectiveness. They're similar, but one's a mathematical definition. Okay, so... anyway, they were talking about, let's see, which is a good example here. I was looking at Pfizer, okay? And they were saying that Pfizer, you know, they waited until they had a certain number of cases, okay? And the first time that they looked at it, they looked at 94 people who got COVID. And then they, you know, looked at those people, and these are people that only develop symptoms, right? They looked at those people, and then they test them and see if they have COVID or not. And then they found out that, wow, you know, how many actually had the vaccine versus not? And, you know, the vast majority of people got the placebo, not the vaccine, okay? So what they do then is they take that number, that percent, and they got up to, I don't know, eventually like 146 people. They take that percentage of people. And so there were people in both groups that got, but there was a larger number of people who got it in the placebo group. And they compare that percentage to each other, okay? And this apparently is a method done, like, started in 1915 to do efficacy. And there's a little math formula, and they come up with a percentage, very low percentage, and then they do the ratio of those two percentages, and they show what how those vary, and that number is where they come up with the 94% effective number. That's the number. It has to do with comparing those two percentages. Okay, so that's efficacy, all right? So there's efficacy, there's safety, and there's effectiveness. Now, the next question is, how do you do the effectiveness? That's what we get when we wait a little bit, and this is why I'm waiting a little bit, okay? I believe in vaccines, okay? If it's safety, we'll see that right away, but we might want to wait and see, you know, it's of these people that when we start vaccinating more than these, at least among these people, among this group, we didn't see anything that really would make us worry about giving the vaccine. That's good. So they think it's safe. So they're applying for the emergency use operation based on two factors. One is that it really seems to make a difference in terms of the percentage of people who got COVID in the treated group versus untreated group, you know, is much, much less, and that it seems to be safe. So that's on that basis, they'll go forward with vaccinating, okay? Now, the next step, to be clear, is to then look at the people who get the vaccine and their two doses and find out what happens to them. Now, among them, then there are a couple of things that can happen, okay? This is where we get to the effectiveness part of it. So effectiveness can do two things. One is it can it could be a vaccine that that prevents you from getting an infection. Now, that would be really good, you know. So it can be a preventative type vaccine. The other kind of vaccine effect that we might notice would be an effect where the you might get a much, much less severe form. So you never get as sick as you would get if you weren't vaccinated. Okay, so that's a more of a treatment type thing. Both of those things are effective, okay? And then the sort of the third effect that you have of a vaccine is whether if you get enough people vaccinated, you get another term that they call impact. And impact is how is it affecting the overall pandemic? How well is it at actually reducing the number of people who end up getting sick? Okay, that's the impact. So there are three different factors, and those take a while to figure out.
RGM.
Reiner, go ahead.
You know I'm going to hit you with the math stuff, but if you're talking 40,000 people tested and less than 200 that have gotten the virus itself, I'm wondering how significant that is statistically.
Yeah, KG7GDB. That's apparently why they had to wait till they had 146 before they. That is the number that is needed to show a difference, according to Pfizer, in the population of the two groups. That combined with the big difference between the two groups in terms of the number of people who got it that didn't get the vaccine versus those who did, gives us the significance. Now, I don't have their data in front of me. We just have to believe them, okay? Now, supposedly, that's another thing to read about, is that our FDA, apparently differing from Britain's FDA, actually is going to look at those, is in the process of looking at that raw data right now and deciding whether it looks real.
That group size does not sound significant because you need to know the testing group that they used. If you're talking about you tested in one city, then you may get different numbers than in another city or another area of the city or that type of thing. So you may get a group of 30 or 40 people that are all exposed at the same place or same area, and that would throw your numbers way out the window when you're talking less than 200 out of 40,000. That's nothing.
Correct. Okay. So that's, again, going back to Dan's question, this is a little bit of the problem. Now, that doesn't tell you that there's anything wrong with the vaccine yet. It just means that, you know, we really haven't waited very long to see what's going to happen to the rest of the people. We also, I don't know that we really tested other people that, like, for instance, people who didn't show any symptoms. Again, I don't have the raw data. But, you know, if you didn't show any symptoms, remember, they're waiting for a certain number of people to develop symptoms, even in the vaccine group, right? So, if there was absolutely nobody that got sick within the vaccine group, then it would be 100% efficacious, okay? And Then the next question you ask is, again, wait long enough, you give it to enough people, there's two more pieces of information we get. We start to then see, okay, if we expand the numbers to millions of people, we'll first of all see if there's any side effects that we didn't see before, because those, again, those odds of getting something weird that would happen are going to show up the more people that you study. So when we go from 30,000 to a million, or, you know, we have, I think, 22.5 million doses that we have lined up here for the first group today. And when we start giving those in large scale, we'll start to see probably more side effects. And again, we'll find that out. That's why I would like to wait a little bit, because I'm not one of the people that they've designated as being essential to get the first vaccine. Those were decided today by a committee, by the way. I don't know if you heard that. The thing that they decided today is the first people who would get the vaccine in the United States would be frontline health workers, okay? Now, within each state, I guess there is a, you know, the states can decide who that really is, but they want to give it to the workers that work in hospitals and in nursing homes first, all right? Now, there's good reasons why those would be the first people that you'd want to vaccinate. One is that they have medical training, so they're going to probably pay closer attention to what happens to that group of people. They're going to be able to identify any symptoms or side effects more quickly. They probably are more compliant in terms of getting data from them. So it's really, you know, a good group to put first. And we need them. You know, we need to not be sick, because when one of the health workers gets sick, then we don't have somebody, you know, we lose a human resource to take care of other people. So good reasoning. Everybody sort of says, yep, that's the first one. And the other thing is the workers in nursing homes, we want to protect them, because if it gets into the nursing home population, that has the biggest fatality rate. Anyway, those will be the first group. And then probably the next group, that's what we have to decide next. It might be those people in the nursing homes that get the next dose. And there's I can tell you the statistics on that. Yeah, hold on just a second. So, but before we get to those, you know, again, they weren't the ones tested on the vaccine, so that's why they're not getting to be the first group. You know, take the riskiest people who weren't given the vaccine in any of the trials and test and suddenly hit them with it, because we don't know what it'll do to them. Okay, so Reiner was first, and then Richard. So Reiner first.
Oh, you can go ahead and see Richard first.
Okay, Richard, go ahead. Okay, I'm going to repeat that real quick for the recording there, that, yeah, he's, again, saying that the first thing is, again, safety, and the second part is effectiveness. So, you know, you consider it safety compared to things like a flu vaccine. If the efficacy, I think that the efficacy of this, and I don't have the exact numbers, is higher from the trials than our flu vaccine is. It's a more efficacious vaccine from that standpoint. And the flu vaccine does make a difference. So even if it ends up only being 50% effective, you know, I guess effectiveness, kind of the bottom line would be looking at, well, you know, how many people who got vaccinated still ended up getting COVID, you know, that got sick and got, you know, worse symptoms. That's, again, you might still get a mild dose of COVID, but, you know, does it make an impact in terms of the number of people who end up in the hospital? That's really kind of what we're on. Or does it make an impact in terms of the number of people that die from it? Or have, you know, does it reduce the time it takes for you to recover so you can get back to work sooner? All these are different effectiveness things that we would look at. KG7, GDB, and over to Reiner.
Well, this is like a perfect example of what I was just suggesting, that here you present the frontline people with the vaccine first, and we look for effectiveness of the vaccine in the very people that are probably the best prepared and best protected against this thing. So you're skewing the numbers is what I'm getting at. And I mean, I understand why, and I understand the reasoning, but you need to be prepared that those numbers may not be very accurate because you are testing on a group of people that is basically well-prepared and well-trained to avoid this vaccine or avoid this virus.
Yep, KD7GB. Good point. On the other hand, that in spite of it being prepared, you know, they are still getting sick, especially the ones that work in the nursing homes. They are getting sick at a pretty high rate. So if we can make a difference in those groups of people, we should see it. I mean, because there's, in spite of all that, you know, they are the ones that are the most exposed, right? So it is kind of a little bit like doing that unethical study that we'd like of like, oh, well, you know, we won't really know until we expose people. So I guess this approach also tells us, okay, we've got people who are, you know, are trained, but they are the ones that are exposed to it. All these people that are showing up at the hospital have active cases of COVID. So, you know, they are getting it every day. So that's it should make a difference. You know, combined with their medical knowledge, hopefully they have nobody that would get COVID after this. So that would be the, you know, ideal thing. So at any rate, I will get the vaccine when enough people have had it, like this first group, to show that, yeah, there's no side effects that are you know, suddenly show up. I mean, there are probably enough people in their 60s in the trial. Yeah, not one of, you know, whether you should get it if you're 85 yet, you know, that's the next group. They really need it. They're the ones that need it the most. And it's because they say that if 8% of the people that in that age group that are cases, but like 40% of the deaths, that was the number I heard today, that this, you know, 40% of the deaths are people over the age of 80, and it's only 8% of the population that's getting COVID, but it really is devastating in that group. So, you know, they would really benefit.
RGM.
Yep, Reiner, go ahead. Oh, sorry, let's take Richard first, then Reiner. Sorry. KD7GB. So the first two are very similar. The Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine are very similar in what they do. I don't have any concerns from what I know about the way they're made or whatever, that they do kind of the same thing. And this is the cool thing about this. This is a new kind of vaccine that we sort of invented, you know, for this this pandemic. This idea of making using your body to make the mRNA that makes the spike protein, okay, it looks like it's a very effective way of doing it because, again, this efficacy value is a great finding. They're, you know, both of them are really high in terms of how well they worked. The only real difference seems to be in the handling and the shelf life of the two, you know, the way they packaged it and things like that. It basically works the same way. Now, the third vaccine that we heard about had some issues. If the one that's made using a chimpanzee adenovirus would be a much cheaper and easier to handle vaccine. And the first two are kind of expensive, and they have to be handled, you know, carefully, and we can't make as much of it. But the third one would be really nice if it works out as well. They had a little bit of trouble with our data. The AstraZeneca one's promising, but they haven't. They had a little mistake in terms of the way that they purported their data. They didn't. They found it's more effective if they give half the dose followed by a full dose, you know, which isn't the way the study was designed. So that might take a little longer to get approval. But it was still worked in that group. So, anyway, Reiner, you had a comment.
Well, a couple things. And I don't know the answer to these questions, so they are questions. Are they testing the people before they're getting the vaccine? Are they testing the people that get the vaccines without having symptoms even, so that we get a better idea, because they may still be getting the symptom or lower symptom rate version of the disease? And third, do we even know how effective a vaccine is going to be? What is the reinfection rate of this virus, or do we even know anything about that yet? Once a person gets it, they're done with it, or is it something that can come back and hit the same person three or four times? All those things would weigh on the way that this vaccine is being developed and should be looked at that way. I mean, if you're not testing everybody that you gave the vaccine to, you may be missing a significant number of people that are still carriers, but they're not getting a severe dose of the disease.
Yep, you're right. And I don't know I don't know the answer to your question, because again, they didn't give us the raw data, and all they did was pronounce that these are our results, and they do think that, again, this is where we have to trust a little in our FDA to look at the data. They're the ones that are going to look at the data. They're not publishing it in a journal and waiting. We don't kind of have time for that. We can. The thing is that I looked at some models, and the thing is, if we can get the vaccine out there sooner, even a less effective vaccine will do more good than if we give it during the big exponential phase. So this is, again, sort of like if we had got this vaccine in the summertime, it would be a lot more effective than it would be right now. It's just math, okay? And I read it, and we don't really know what the effect is going to be. But if in terms of looking at this R value, this reproductive value, when we have a big outbreak, you know, the outbreak is infecting people faster than they can become immune to it, okay? And the whole point of this is that we actually want to give it to people before they get sick, so they have time to develop an immunity, develop antibodies, and then be able to, you know, when they are ultimately exposed to somebody, you know, then they can fight it off, right? So if it's actively happening, what ends up happening is that it isn't very effective, because people are passing the virus along before the immunization takes. And this takes two doses. This takes two doses of medicine a couple of weeks apart, all right? So, you know, definitely after the first shot, nothing really is going to happen to you. It's not going to really be effective until you get the second shot. And you wait a couple months, all right? So in the meantime, we've got to not, you know, have a big spreading, you know, pandemic going on. We need to keep those numbers under control, which is, again, the reason to kind of still not let down our guard, okay? It'll be much more effective if our numbers are under control, because you're much more likely to, you know, develop the immunity from the vaccine before you encounter someone who's sick.
RGM, final comment.
Go ahead, Ryan. And again, we still don't test people that don't have symptoms, so we don't know how many were asymptomatic, or maybe they were asymptomatic and not really infected. We don't know what that's another thing we don't know is if you're asymptomatic in that group. I don't know that they got tested. Go ahead.
Well, that brings one more question, and that is, how long is the remains, titers, whatever we're using for testing, available after you've recovered? But to what you said earlier, I agree that getting this thing out early is the best possible thing we can do, because that's the only way we're going to know. What I have a problem with, when you say trust the FDA, I have a problem with politicians and drug companies and things that are worth billions of dollars, because I don't think anybody our age is so ignorant to believe that there is an influence peddling and profiteering going on when this happens. W7RGM.
Oh, yeah, KG7GDB, and I agree with you there. This is the interesting thing, is that supposedly Pfizer didn't take the money up front in terms of the, to develop their vaccine. Moderna certainly did. Moderna was a new company. They were given money to develop the vaccine and also money to, we basically have purchased the vaccine from both of them. And, you know, politically, that was our part of our government strategy, was that we're going to, you know, make it so that there is a market for this vaccine no matter what. That we're going to pay these guys, you know, so that they go ahead and they go into production, and they're already in production of this stuff, even though it's not approved yet. We're still paying them, you know. So they're not waiting around to say, okay, now we got approval, let's start making it. So that was an investment, if you will. Now, in exchange for that, if it does work, and we sort of have this trust in our system that it's going to work, yeah, now we get a big jump on, getting this stuff out there. So that's the advantage. But yeah, there's another huge thing, you know, just from a worldwide level of, you know, the availability of this stuff. The thing is, we have actually a lot of vaccines that are out there that are being developed. Pull that number up there. It's in the hundreds. There are hundreds of different vaccines that are out there that have been started as a result of COVID. And, ours, let's see, right now they say there are 13 vaccines in large-scale efficacy tests right now. And there are 6 vaccines approved for earlier limited use, okay? So, there's 40 that are out there waiting for testing, safety, and dosage. And so there's other vaccines on the way, and I'm hoping that they all, they all work. But, obviously they're going to make a lot of money on the vaccines. And so I kind of would be nicer if the AstraZeneca worked, because it was a cheaper one than these, these recombinant DNA ones, which are going to be more expensive. Anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We're kind of out of time here, and I didn't get to talk about anything else besides COVID. I guess the thing is, I will get the vaccine when it's gone through its trial with the first group of people, and they make it available to our age group. You know, if it, I have some trust that the system, I like vaccines, they help. Talked about the different effects. Even if it doesn't prevent you from getting it, it might make it lessen the impact. It might make it less severe. And we don't know how long, like Reiner said, we don't know how long you're going to have the immunity to it. We have to wait. How are we going to know? It's only been 3 months. We do know that some people who have gotten coronavirus have been reinfected. Now, whether it was the same strain or a different strain, don't know. But there's evidence that, if you've had coronavirus, you're not necessarily immune to another bout of it. So, again, it's fairly early in the whole process of what is happening. We got these kind of scientific studies are coming out like every week, and if you want to see stuff on that and you're interested in the science part, look at that University of Washington link where they go through these trials. It's a we are learning stuff, as time goes, surprising stuff sometimes. But that's what we, got to be a little bit patient. But don't let down your guard. I think again, have confidence in the fact that they're, I don't think anyone is trying to make a, a snake oil that they're going to try to sell us for billions. I don't think that's going to get through the approval process. I wouldn't trust the Russian vaccine so much. That one sounded a little sketchy to me, but these seem to work. If these numbers are real, I think we could be confident that they're going to do what they do.
W7NAT.
Okay, Nate, I think you might just get the last word tonight. It's 807.
Yeah, I know you're one of your closest off, and I understand that. Well, I'm with you. I'm 82, and if it comes around the time that they ask me if I want to take it, I'll take it.
Okay, well, good, Nate. You know, and I think that, you know, I mean, if you're a person that takes a flu vaccine each year, I'm sure it's going to work like that. You know, it's just, this is just, it is new, and we don't have, normally we would wait, you know, for a year or two before we ever did this, you know, we ever released it. And you know, if it were fewer numbers of people who were affected, that most certainly would be what would happen. You know, we would go slow and cautiously with this. You know, so, yes, they did accelerate the trials, and that's why Reiner has so many questions, because we would normally try to answer those questions, you know, but if we can make an impact now, if it really is, okay, these early results are real, we can get our healthcare workers protected, and then they go next to people who are, you know, do essential services, you know, public servants and things like that, so that we can keep all the businesses and things running, and, you know, that would be kind of another logical group to get it to. The most at-risk people, you know, that if it is safe to give them to people who are sick in nursing homes, then, you know, they should get it. So, you know, we will eventually chip away at it, and once we've vaccinated and enough people get it, then this problem should start to go away. You know, that's the ideal thing, of course. But it might take until this time next year before we really know how effective this thing is going to be. Okay, let's see. My final public service message for this evening is check batteries and things. I was going to talk a little bit about batteries. I've been surprised lately, especially by AAA batteries, especially the kind you get from Costco, just leaking and destroying your equipment. So if you have flashlights that or things that you set away, this is the winter time, and it's time you probably should go through and just check your flashlights, check your radios, anything that has alkaline batteries in it, make sure that they are okay and that they have not leaked and are destroying your equipment. I just discovered my nice headlamp that I had is leaked, and it sort of works, but it doesn't work like it used to work. It got this alkaline junk. It's potassium hydroxide, really caustic stuff, and it just eats away at solder tracings, I think. So I discovered just about everything I have with AAAs has got some kind of battery leakage problem. I don't know why that is, but if you haven't checked your AAA devices lately, this might be a good time of year to go ahead and swap them out with some new batteries. Anyway, the time now 8:10 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. There will be a recording available. I think Richard's recording tonight of tonight's discussion, and hopefully we'll get that up on the WA7ABUgroups.io page. This net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz, and our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and those who stood by to give us a clear frequency. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now at 8:11 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal, undirected, amateur use, KG7GB.